You're listening to the Ruby on Rails podcast.
Happy Wednesday and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Elise Schaefer, and I use she, her pronouns. Burnout is a common occurrence in the tech industry, and the recent onslaught of layoffs have left many stressed about their job search or overworked from the increased demands of the smaller team sizes. I know some of my listeners have experienced burnout, and I myself have had a recent experience with burnout that took several months for me to recover from. I really wanted to have an episode to educate our community about burnout, how to avoid it, how to deal with it when it happens, and things like that. So today, I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Katie Cook to the show, who uses she, her pronouns. She's a therapist in the Bay Area and an expert on workplace well-being, particularly in tech. She's the author of The Psychology of Silicon Valley, published in 2019. She spent 2022 on a research trip around the U.S. in a self-built camper van working on her next book about the psychology of America. She holds a PhD in clinical psychology, an MA in modern culture studies, and an MA in counseling psychology. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to be here.
You have done a lot of work in emotional well-being in the workplace. And can you kind of talk a little bit about the work that you've done and what your focus has been?
I started out as a counselor back in my early 20s, like a therapist at a master's level. And ironically, I got a little burned out after a year and a bit and had to kind of pause. And I went back to school. And when I was done with school and my other degrees, I decided I wanted to try to implement it in a real way with workplaces, with the office stress I was seeing. I worked at a children's hospital in London at the time, really closely with HR and training and education and that kind of stuff. And so I saw all these things in the medical community, very front, hands-on, first person. And it was really sad and it was really jarring. And so when I came back to the States in 2018, I opened up a small consultancy firm. It was just me. And I started doing workplace well-being consulting and training and education and trying to address some of the issues that we'll talk about today with employers, primarily with both everybody at every level of a company, trying really to get to the C-suite level to ingrain some of these ideas in their head, because often you're so divorced from what's going on, at least in certain companies with kind of rank and file members of staff, that you don't see the burnout, you don't see the overload and the stress firsthand. And you might not be privy to it, kind of depending on the culture. So that was my goal. And then I did this trip around the US. I kind of worked part-time consulting during that while I was doing research. And then I saw the lack of therapy options and availability throughout every state, all the states I went to, 49 of them. And I decided when I came back to go back into practice. So I'm now working as a therapist in the Bay Area with a lot of tech people, actually. So it's been a really kind of full circle, instructive way back into the whole thing.
So can we talk a little bit about burnout? Is it more prevalent in the tech industry than in other industries? Is it kind of throughout the entire economy? Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it's interesting. So there are definitely risk factors for burnout. And some of those would be perfectionism, which you definitely see more of in the tech industry. There's learned behaviors too from parents and things like that. There's a risk factor around emotional literacy, I guess, or emotional intelligence. So inability to kind of name emotions, to identify emotions, to be in touch with what is going on within you, which can be a problem in tech because it's so logistical and so abstract and maybe not in that part of your brain. You're not exercising that as much. So there are some risk factors, I would say, with tech, combined with kind of the long hours and this cultural messaging in some places around kind of like rise and grind and hustle and all that nonsense that makes us value our productivity around our value as human beings. So yeah, I would say there's a lot of it in tech, to answer your question.
That kind of tracks with just my experience of talking to people in tech. I feel like a lot of people that I've talked to either feel like they're burning out now or have dealt with burnout in the past. And you sort of touched on a little bit of this, the long hours, the need to grind, being a perfectionist. Are there other causes of burnout that people should pay attention to? Like, how can someone know early that they're headed in that direction?
That's a really good question. And again, it is going to be easier for those people who are more in touch and who can check in with themselves and kind of be aware of their emotions and name them. But in general, I would say like what you're looking out for is feeling mentally overwhelmed, your emotions kind of being in turmoil, physical exhaustion. So there's the physiological stress and then there's the psychological stress that kind of pair together to make this magic burnout scenario. And there's obviously the physiological, biological stuff, which is like fatigue and is your immune system breaking down? And then there's all the psychological stuff, which is how is your emotional world? How's your mental world? So it can be things like physical energy levels, exhaustion, but then there's also this mental component of, are you disengaged from your work? Are you being self-critical because you feel like you're always behind and overloaded? Are you feeling depersonalized in any way, which is essentially a feeling of detachment or feeling outside of yourself or like you're not fully kind of participating in reality? So it does get kind of dark and deep kind of fast. I was even reading an article the other day about the head of a hospital during COVID who felt so burned out during the pandemic that she died by suicide. And so the reality, even though we toss this term around, I think quite a bit, the reality is can be really, really scary. So if you're noticing any of those things in yourself, I would say that's the time to really pause, take stock, check in, talk to somebody, and we can talk about what are some of the good things that you can do too. But those are some of the markers I would say to look for if you're starting to feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, I think for me, this is interesting because that tracks a lot with my experience. By the time I realized that it was getting to a bad spot, I would wake up just already exhausted. And then I would power through the whole day. And then I would get to the end of the day. And then I would like cancel stuff with friends because I was just like, I'm so exhausted. I don't want to like go out for dinner or whatever. Just seemed like I ended up in this positive feedback loop of I was stressed and that made me more anxious. And then the anxiety caused me to like feel like I wasn't doing my job. So I feel like you're describing a lot of what I went through, and it did sort of feel like a feedback loop, like it was just getting worse. And I was in this spiral until I finally threw my hands up and said, okay, I got to go.
Yeah. I think a lot of people too kind of will wait until it gets to that point where the spiral has gotten so unsustainable that there's just nothing else it feels like you can do anymore except throw up your white flag and be like, I'm done. Someone please help me now. And then you have all these other things that come along with that. And it's ironic too, because you're trying to perform at this higher level beyond what you're actually capable of maybe as a human being with the hours in the day. And as a result, your performance actually suffers. So you're going to be less capable of what you're trying to do if you're going along at this crazy pace. And then your physical health can shift, which then doesn't allow you to perform and work even more. Your mood will shift. When I'm burned out, at least I should speak for myself, I'm more irritable and cranky. And I think loneliness, like you said, pulling away and disengaging is such a big piece of it. And that's the piece that we need, right? Like we need the support, but we're too freaking tired to like reach out and ask for it because we're burnt out. And so we don't get it. And then you get stuck sometimes in like this shame spiral too of feeling bad about yourself that you're not able to perform, which is such a value in America. Yeah, it's really hard to extricate yourself from, like you were describing, for sure.
Yeah, I think another piece was listening to somebody talk about this on another podcast recently. And she said for her, and this sort of tracked with my experience, it was like a lot of tiny things that individually they were like, oh, well, this is fine. I just got to get through this and I'll be fine. And then like another one would happen. It's like, okay, well, I just got to get through this and I'll be fine. But then that happened for like 6 months or whatever. And by the end of the 6 months, a lot had happened.
Yeah, I think we're taught, oh, just one more, like we can do just a little bit more, keep going. Mm-hmm. There's this expectation of resilience, I think, in American culture, which is not realistic because some things are not meant to be sustained at that rate or that long. And I should preface all this by saying that stress and pressure can be really good things. We need those things. They're indications that we're working towards something or something is worthwhile. But if you don't have all the things to balance that out, like good boundaries, good coping mechanisms that make you feel kind of stable and comfortable in that space, if you're not managing it with those things, you're going to burn out because the stress is going to accumulate and inevitably we fall behind, take on too much, whatever the case might be.
So what are some of the symptoms that people can maybe pay attention to when they're dealing with burnout? What can people expect?
I think the mental overwhelm is probably the first thing I would look for. Just that simple question, like, do you feel overwhelmed or do you feel like things are manageable right now. Are your emotions stable and comfortable, or do they feel tumultuous? Does it feel icky and like too much and like you don't know what's going on or things all over the place? How is your physical health? How is your energy level? Do you feel physically exhausted in addition to mentally exhausted? Is your mood shifting or your criticism, cynicism shifting, either in relation to yourself or to other people? Shame, self-criticism, disengagement from work, that kind of thing, cynical about the work. You can measure this stuff, right? Like the studies that come out around stress and burnout are usually based in some way, shape, or form around cortisol levels, because stress raises our cortisol. So you literally can measure this if you want to. I'm not sure how one would go about doing that on their own with the healthcare that's out there, but there are some real biological markers too. And then the other one I think is paralysis. Like you get to this place where you just feel like it's too much and you're paralyzed to do anything else. Like it just feels like the walls are closing in or there's a storm cloud over you or you're hitting a wall or whatever the metaphor is that works. I'm kind of curious how you would describe your experience of what that means. The words are one, the feeling of it is so different.
Yeah. So I did experience this. And some days it was worse than other days. So some days it would be really bad where like I would sit down at the computer and like things that I had done thousands of times, I just couldn't do. Mm-hmm. I knew how to do them. I knew what the solution was, but my brain just didn't want to let me do it. And that's really what it felt like. It felt like fighting my brain to do my job. And then other days I would be able to like kind of do some things. And it was a very just weird and surreal experience.
Yeah, I think fighting your brain is such an interesting description, right? Because like you've done it before, you know what needs to be done. And you're just at this place where you can't get there because the stress has just accumulated to this point of kind of no return, even though there is a return. We can talk about that a little.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a really hard place to be too, because it's not like a diagnosis. Burnout isn't a medical or psychological diagnosis. They call it an occupational condition caused by constant stress that can't be managed. So they recognize that it's this occupational hazard, essentially, or condition, but not a diagnosis. So there's no necessarily like medicine you can take or pill you can take the way like if you had anxiety, that might be an option, right? So there's less, I would say, resources available as something that has a more kind of firm psychological hold. In the literature, it's just a little bit more of a colloquialism, I guess, and more of a vague term that can mean a lot of different things too. I disagree with the World Health Organization in that it's not just occupational. This isn't just from work. This can be from all sorts of other things. And like the layers that go into what causes that stress to accumulate are just so vast.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you point out that it can come from other places. One of the things that I've been thinking about recently is the tech industry just over the last 18 months. I mean, it's been sort of scary in terms of a lot of companies doing layoffs, a lot of people really scared about their careers. I've had people tell me that they're burnt out just in the job search. And I know people that also have family things that contribute to some of these things. And so it seems like it's pretty widespread and has a variety of causes.
Yeah, I think the most obvious one is work, right? Which is why, like, that's why the World Health Organization goes there. That's why it's talked about in business settings. But you're right. It's not just work. It's also looking for work. It's also the fear of having to look for work and knowing, holding mentally that space that, oh gosh, there's layoffs here. Maybe there's layoffs coming for me too. I'll probably make this point when I write that next book that burnout, it's like a public health issue. Right. So it's not an individual failing. It's not something that any one person can fix. It's this system of things that have contributed to us taking on so, so, so much. And that can be parenting. I read this thing the other day that American parents are the most burned out group of people in the world.
That's very interesting.
Americans are some of the most stressed out people in the world. Just keeps getting worse every year, which is really interesting. So it's not just, oh, there's too much work to do. It's like, well, how many jobs are you doing? Are you doing domestic labor? Are you doing parental labor? Are you doing different caregiving types of labor on top of that? Or even just that? That's enough. That's a full job. And then all this other I don't want to get too political, but thinking about political turmoil, like that takes a toll. That's a layer of information and stress that we're all holding in the same way that the pandemic was a layer of stress that we all collectively held together. And then you kind of marry that up with all these interesting, uniquely American things or Western things around lack of social support, income and wealth inequality, medical and mental health support, time off. We get no time off. We are the only country, hold on, the only advanced economy that doesn't guarantee paid time off and paid holiday. The only one in the whole world. And we have less time off than I think any country but one, which is Micronesia. And then goodness, we get a third the time of the UK and France. So we're taught this cultural narrative that working and taking on work is such a great thing, right? And also that we should be self-reliant and we're built on these puritanical like work ethics. And just in this space, both culturally and industrially, that really values productivity, what we make rather than who we are. And so being isn't good enough, right? You have to just keep doing and making and then consuming and then producing and consuming. And you get stuck in this loop that just is exhausting and doesn't leave any time for living or being, which is the fun part.
Yeah. This is really the first time that I had heard someone really attribute it to having systemic causes. And that is very interesting to me. And maybe we can spend a little time there, because one of the things, we do have such a work-focused culture, at least in America. For me, when I was just getting out of school and I was entering the workforce, I placed a lot of my own personal worth on the work that I did. And then that led me to a certain type of work ethic that maybe was a little unhealthy in my 20s. And then slowly I kind of found, I had realized that, oh, that's not a good situation. But I think that that's what we do. We've conditioned people to sort of feel like that is their worth.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like this perfect storm of individualism, which is a huge risk factor for burnout. So the more individualistic Western cultures are more susceptible to burnout. And the US, I forget, it would be Hofstadt or Hofstede, I think, measures this. The US is by far, lots and lots and lots of points, the most individualistic country in the world. We are so far away from anything resembling collectivism or community-based values compared to other countries that it's shocking when you look at it. So yeah, it does seem like a public health issue, right? Because you can predict burnout by country and what kind of, if something will have a negative or positive risk factor to attribute burnout in a positive or negative way. So like single parenthood is one example, because there's so many provisions in a place like France to help parents out that it's either neutral or like a positive or net positive thing there where you get more support. Whereas in a country like Iran, where there's less social support, being a single parent would be a negative risk factor for burnout. So you can look at all these different kind of measures in different countries and see that these things really do make a difference, right? If you have mental health care built into your healthcare and insurance, and if you value it, and if there is more financial stability in a country versus less, right? If people are going to be less consumed with, which relates back to producing, right? Because we're taught to produce and that then gives us money and makes us stable. So we're constantly just running and running and running, trying to like get there and make it and be stable. And for some people, I found this on my trip especially, it just occupies so much of your mental space. If you're not financially stable, that can be a huge contributor because you'll just work so hard. I've met so many people who work 2, 3, 4 jobs. Good jobs, teachers, firefighters. Yeah. It's really shocking. The combo, I think, of the lack of social support combined with those cultural narratives that are around self-reliance and do-it-yourself-ism and hustle culture, it's just so dangerous.
One of the things that's interesting there is in tech, we tend to be fairly well paid. We tend to have very, very good benefits. The benefits that I've had at startups that I've worked at, and I've had doctors tell me that the benefits are better than the benefits that they have working at whatever practice they have. And so there's a sense in which it's like a privilege to have that kind of healthcare in our society, but also sort of feel like that didn't really help me avoid these situations. And that is like a little bit of an interesting, like even the people who maybe have a better situation, I don't even know what someone would do if someone had worse health insurance than I had at the time. Like, I don't know what they would have done. And I also recognize that I was in my own personal situation. I was in a very privileged situation to have the savings to be able to just say, okay, I'm going to leave my job, take time off, figure out what I want to do. And that was also a gift, I think, in terms of giving me the space to kind of recover from it. I don't even know what people would do if they don't have access to healthcare, don't have access to mental health care, which can be very difficult.
I think some workplaces are better about it. The report kind of makes me sad that came out recently that like workplace well-being programs don't generally do that much, don't generally help that much. As someone who used to try to help in that way, especially, it makes me really sad. But there are definitely things that do work. I know a few companies that I can think of offhand in the Bay Area that do provide in-house therapy. I have a therapist on site at least like a couple of days a week, or unlimited time off. Not that everyone will take that, because that battles with the cultural narratives that we have, right? But there are some companies that will encourage you to take all your time off or won't let you not take it off or whatever. So there are companies that do get it, that get a four-day work week will make you more productive because you get to rest more. But the majority, I don't think, have latched onto it yet, because producing is the goal, right? And growth is the goal, or money is the goal, rather than something that looks more like balanced and holistic and healthy. And it's sad. I think especially with startups, it's a learning process, right? And you're maybe not going to get it right away, whereas someone maybe who's been around longer might see the value, hopefully, in some of these things. But I don't know.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious, what are some things that people can do to maybe alleviate the symptoms of burnout if they start to see it, or they start to think that maybe they're headed in that direction? What can people do to maybe prevent themselves from getting to the point where they have to throw their hands up?
Yeah, to not be at the bottom of the deep dark hole.
Yeah.
There's a few things. So I always think of, and this sounds weird coming from someone who's so emotional and soft and works as a therapist, but I typically think of my brain as like a computer most of the time. And so I focus a lot on what I'm putting in it. And that includes things like the people that I'm around the most. I'm considering the voices that are around me. If they're positive, negative, are they happy? Are they having the mindsets that I would want to emulate? Because there's so much research to show that we become like the things we're around, right? And that influences everything from our health habits to our happiness levels to our mindsets. And so I think about my brain in terms of kind of like inputs and outputs sometimes, with lots of time, hopefully, for reflecting in the middle. But what am I putting in terms of news? Am I overwhelming myself with another layer that I don't need to in terms of news, in terms of social media? Am I spending too much time ruminating on the economy or inflation? Or what can I do to kind of control what goes in? So that's always like my first question is, what are you allowing in and what does your environment look like? Because emotional contagion is such a real thing that's easy or easier to kind of control. If it's still early, how much rest are you getting? Are you getting enough rest? What does your rest look like? It doesn't have to be like lying on a couch with a thing of popcorn, like zoning out and watching a show. It can be like doing your favorite hobby, it can be restful and restorative, or going for a walk. So there's lots of different ways to rest. And then support, I would say. So asking for it is a big one, and a lot of us struggle with admitting that we need help. And so if you have a partner or a work buddy or a boss that you really trust, like those check-ins, if you do recognize that you're starting to feel burned out, or you have someone to check in with you, or you can check in with each other and see where you're at, that can be really helpful. Any capacity to build your life around yourself and your natural patterns is really helpful. So I, for instance, do not start work until noon. We are recording this at like 2 p.m. because I know I am pretty useless before I've had two cups of coffee. I sleep till like 9 or 10. I stay up late. That is my natural rhythm. I have the privilege to build my practice and my life around that. And then I work late. And then another one is like, what are your coping mechanisms? And I think if I say that, if I ask you like, what are your coping mechanisms? You either don't know what I mean, or it doesn't kind of immediately spring to mind. That's something to focus on for sure. Because often we'll default to ones that maybe aren't super helpful, like drinking or drugs or depersonalization and detachment or isolation. We might not do the ones that are healthier and probably more sustainable for us. What else? Gosh, if it's still early, with my ADHD clients, I always recommend task chunking, which is exactly what it sounds like. where you just break down and chunk out tasks. I like won't have people look at the next task until they're done with the current one. So it doesn't feel too overwhelming in a given day. Oof, geez. Boundaries, good boundaries, maintaining boundaries, saying no, asking for help if you need it, like delegating is good and something we're not super great at. And then some of the really, if you look in philosophy and stuff, like deep, wonderful thinkers used to do is this pattern of, and they talk about it in this book called Philosophy of Walking, but like this pattern of deep work and deliberate rest, which I really, really love. So an hour or two or whatever you want to do, 45 minutes of deep focused work, and then a deliberate segment of rest where you go for a walk, you get up, you lie down, you journal, you do whatever you need, but you alternate between the two of those. So the ideas flow more easily. The guy who wrote Hamilton got the idea for Hamilton like while he was on vacation. So vacations, hobbies, yeah, mindfulness, all like the obvious ones, right? Like mindfulness, talking to people, therapy, vacations, rest, but then also these little things that I think you can also add in.
Like what you said about knowing what your coping mechanisms are, my therapist did this exercise with me where we like figured out what are the things that I do that recharge me and help me like kind of burn off stress. And she calls it like a self-care menu. And she's like, whenever you're feeling stressed, just pull it out and look and just pick something that you can do. And I use that a lot, actually.
Can I ask like what is on yours that works that you really...
Ooh, so exercise is a big one. Cycling and running are two that really help me. I hate running, but I do it. I do it because I have to. Meditation's on the list. Reading, which this is also kind of part of my own experience, is that I had stopped doing things that were like hobbies too. I love reading and I had not read in 8 or 9 months. I hadn't read any fiction or anything like that. It's interesting because like now I've been working through what are some signals I can pay attention to. And that's one of them. Like if it's been a couple months and I haven't read a book, probably a good sign that I need to make a change. I love to cook. So trying a new cooking experiment or trying to make something I've never made before, that's really helpful. Having friends over, even if we're not going to go out or get dinner or something, like just having friends come over and hang out is on the list. So there's a few of the things that are on my list.
Yeah. Like the social support I think is so important and something that's really hard now too, like post-pandemic. Right? Because more people work from home, which is a risk factor. If you're not around a community of people, whether it's at work or in your social life, that's a huge risk factor to not have the system to build you up that you need. You can't do it all on your own, right?
Yeah.
So internet is such a good one. Even if you're an introvert like me, like I recognize the value of meeting up and entertaining and socializing. For sure.
Yeah. I used to do like a lot of dinner party things too. And so that's a nice, fun sort of thing. I mean, even if it's something small, just invite people over and be like, hey, I'm going to make dinner tomorrow. You want to come over? And
yeah. I can't wait for that. We're moving in like a month and we have this big outdoor space, which we don't have here. Like we don't have any outdoor space. It's also like a lot less dangerous, our new place where we will be living. So I'm so excited to do exactly that, to have people over to watch the Super Bowl or a housewarming party or whatever, any excuse to have people that you love around you and do things that you love, like you were saying, like reading and hobbies and stuff.
Yeah. I just also wanted to comment, you had said about taking vacation time and taking time off. One of the things that really surprised me is that I feel like my own experience is that I didn't do anything for a couple of months afterwards, but then I had all of this energy and drive and I just felt like I was bouncing back even higher than I was before it happened. And that was a very interesting thing. So I think the idea of taking time off when you start to notice it, recognizing that you kind of need that is also sort of an interesting, important thing too.
Totally. I love that. I found a study yesterday when I was paging through stuff that might be interesting to chat about. And the study said that, I can send it to you if you want, that infrequent vacations lead to heart disease. So vacations literally make you healthier and happier and age better. And it was a study on women in particular and kind of like myocardial health. And it was fascinating. All these things that we take for granted as, yeah, that's like a nice thing to do. Like vacations are good. And they don't have to be big 1 or 2 week vacations. They can be like a long weekend to somewhere that's calm and lovely that you've been wanting to go to. It doesn't have to be like 2 week trip to Europe or back, whatever. But yeah, infrequent vacations are a risk to your health. So don't do that, anyone.
Yeah, I'm going to use that as justification to take a ton of vacations.
But I know what you mean about bouncing back better than when you are burned out. every time I've done something that required way too much effort, like finishing my PhD or writing a book or my trip that I just did, it was just a lot. All those things are just a lot. And you need a break afterwards, right? And I think too, we were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, but I am currently a little burned out by my wedding planning. And I totally get now why people traditionally took their honeymoon right after their wedding, because it is a shit, it's a lot of effort leading up to this thing. Kind of like finals or something, right? Like you put in all this effort and then you collapse and you got to take the time that you need to restore rather than just pushing through. So more vacations.
So awesome. Do you have any other advice for people who might be listening who are looking for what to do about burnout? I know we talked about early, but maybe do you have any advice for people who are further along?
So all those things that we talked about a minute ago can be very preventative, can be very good. I think if you're maybe in the early stages of something, but mindfulness is not going to save you from the deep, dark holes and depths of burnout, right? Like no amount of meditating can get you out of there. So at some point, you really need to be honest about what the root causes of your burnout are, and then understand that, what those are, and then take some kind of tangible steps to change those. Often that will have to be negotiated with other people, which is hard for some people to broach that conversation or ask for what they need or admit that they're not well in some way. But addressing those root causes is really, really important. So it might look like a break for a while to figure out what that looks like. It might look like offloading some of your responsibilities, looking at your job description, saying, am I doing just what's in here? Am I doing more? Why am I doing more? Is this more than one job and one person should reasonably be able to handle? Am I even getting compensated for all these extra things that I'm doing somehow? And how did this get to be? And then talk to a supervisor or boss about that. It might be they need to hire someone new. It might be a matter of delegation in some respect, but look at your workload, essentially if work especially is the main cause of burnout, and see what can be done to kind of manage that. Because that's one of the, obviously, according to the World Health Organization, right? Like the main cause of this. Look at your hours throughout the week too. Like if you're working, I forget where I read this, I'll have to find it, but there's a couple tipping points that are risk factors for burnout. One's 50 hours a week, one's 60 hours a week or more. And so if you're working somewhere in that range, there's a good chance at some point, if you're not already burned out, you will be. It's very, very common. 25% of people at any given time are burnt out, of employees, I should say. 3/4 are sometimes or often burned out. So that's a huge chunk of your workforce. And then half of employees are at any given time looking for a new job, which is something to keep in mind. So this is, as an employer, something that is very real in terms of turnover and cost of training and hiring new people. But yeah, I mean, the last 4 years, especially since the pandemic, have been particularly hard. There's some ridiculous number in the 80 something percents about well-being decreasing and work life getting worse, and it looks not great. So addressing the burnout causes, I think root causes is a big one.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I think this was such a great episode. I really do want to thank you for coming on and talking about burnout with us.
Thank you. It makes me feel less burned out to have conversations like this. So I think that's one of my things, is just connecting and feeling intellectually stimulated and having a good chat. Such a good thing. So thank you.
So this has been the Ruby on Rails podcast. It was a pleasure getting to talk with Dr. Cook. We're starting something new on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you have comments about this episode or a question or a story, send an email to comments@therubyonrailspodcast.com. You can include a text comment, or you can attach a file from voice memos or Google Recorder, and we'll respond to some of those in a future show. Thanks to Paul, our wonderful editor over at Peachtree Sound, for making us sound like professionals. And thank you for listening. You're a gem.
You've been listening to the Ruby on Rails podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded to stay in the loop on Ruby on Rails and open source software. While you're at it, please leave us a review. And thank you for listening.